Well, Tyler, I did not think that it would be this difficult to get our three founders in the same room at the same time, but we finally did it.
Well, you know, Eddie, they're busy people, and they got a lot going on, but I'm happy we finally got them.
That's right. This is the Adgene Founders Podcast.
In this episode, we sit down with Adgene's founders, Melina Fan, Ken Fan, and Benji Chen. We learn what it was like to get Adgene off the ground and what the founders hope to see in the repository's future. If you've ever been curious about what it takes to start your own nonprofit, this is the episode for you. Okay, so we're sitting here with the founders of Adgene, and I'll actually have you guys go around and introduce yourselves really quick. So, Melina, I guess, we'll start with you.
Hi, my name's Melina, and as you mentioned, I'm one of the co-founders of Adgene. Prior to Adgene, I was doing my PhD work at Harvard Medical School.
Great. My name is Ken. I'm also one of the co-founders of Adgene. Before I led all the business and finance for the organization, I actually was an analyst at Credit Suisse, an investment bank based in California.
All right. My name is Benji. I'm married to Melina. And prior to founding Adgene, Melina and I graduated, got our degree on the same day. I'm a computer scientist turned into a biological engineer.
And where did you guys graduate from? Where were you guys at school together, Melina and Reggie?
We were in undergrad together at MIT.
Okay, awesome.
But we graduated from PhD at the same time.
Nice.
Yeah, in different places.
Yeah. And Benji, what was your PhD in? I didn't even know that.
My PhD was in computer science.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And Ken, I don't know where you went either. Where did you?
So I went to Tufts undergrad. Okay. I was actually a computer engineering economics major.
Mm-hmm. And Ken and Melina are brother and sister. I don't know if we said that or... but,
we're all related.
Yeah.
So it's kind of... Adgene kind of started as like a family business, and you guys were all in the area together as well, which is pretty neat. So I guess we'll go right into what founding Adgene was like. I guess, first of all, where did the idea for Adgene come from, and why did it get founded in the first place?
So the idea for Adgene came from difficulties that I had during my PhD. And in my lab, my lab's favorite protein was PGC1 at the time. It's a transcriptional coactivator. And we were looking for proteins that bound to PGC1. So I did a screen for interacting proteins, maybe picked up 20 different proteins, and wanted to test if the interactions were real. So I went into the literature, found 20 labs that had plasmids that encoded those proteins, and requested them. And that was where I first encountered the difficulties with plasmid sharing. We had maybe 10 scientists write back. A lot of them took a long time to send the materials. They weren't always correct. And so the idea that, you know, a lot of people's research could be delayed or not even happen at all came from that experience.
Cool. And so did, I guess, how soon was it after you were on that project that you were like, I should start a company for this?
So it's interesting. I mean, I did have the idea for it, and that day, I remember Benji and I went to an ice skating show at Harvard. It was a demonstration, and I told him the idea, and he immediately liked it. And actually, Ken was not living in Boston at the time, so after that show, I came back and gave Ken a call. He was living in California at the time, and so he seemed to like the idea, or at least didn't completely shoot it down. And next thing I knew, he had quit his job and was moving back. So at that point, I knew that I was doing this as well.
Yeah, so Ken, I guess what sold you on the idea when Melina first told you?
Well, I was actually looking to leave my investment banking job for a while. I'd started back in 2002, 2003. I'd started the job, and it was a great experience right out of college to be able to get the training in finance. But I quickly realized it wasn't what I wanted to do long term for a career. And I was actually looking for a more mission-driven organization to join. And I had actually started poking around, talking to people in my network, and that's when Melina called me right at that point when I was looking for an opportunity to join another company to apply my finance and business skills more towards some kind of common good. And Adgene really had a lot of those elements that I was looking for, and it had this this entrepreneurial aspect, which I'd always wanted to work at a startup and help start a company. So that was really exciting to me.
Sure. So it was kind of like perfect timing for you. I guess, did you know what a plasmid was before?
No, I didn't actually. I had no idea. I never took a biology course while I was in college.
Yeah.
And Melina had to give me a crash course on that.
Yeah. So from the sounds of it, Melina, you kind of brought in the idea for the mission. Ken, you were kind of like the finance and business side of it. And then Benji, how did you get involved?
Well, as with just about everything on the internet these days, if you're going to start a company, you're going to need to build a website. So I think that was originally Melina's intention for me was to, you know, we need somebody who can program and build a database and build a website. And that's how I got initially got involved. But what I really enjoyed about the earlier part of Agine was literally to do everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were a lot of IT and technology aspect of it, but there were also probably even more so of non-IT and technology side that kind of drew my interest.
Sure. And were you also kind of sold from the get-go, or did it take a little while?
You know, I don't remember. Yeah. I think, it was a while back. I think more than anything, I think I wasn't really sure what I was going to do after I get my degree. Mm-hmm. And so this was kind of an interesting idea to do it. Yeah. And didn't really think much beyond that.
Sure, yeah. Yeah. And I guess, Melina, actually a question for you now. Going back after you got your degree, was this something that you had always figured you would be doing? You'd be going into some kind of biotech startup, or did this just kind of like fall into your lap?
Yeah, actually, this was not what I had planned to do. I had already applied for a postdoc and had been accepted to a lab at Stanford. And so this was a kind of different path than I think I was thinking for myself. I'm really fortunate that, you know, that lab said I could defer for a couple of years and try it. And it turns out I love working at Agene doing a startup. And as Ken mentioned, the mission and being able to help labs far beyond what my own research project it was really gratifying.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I guess maybe having members of your family also being involved was made it kind of easier for you too.
easier and harder.
Well, I guess
I would say actually we were very fortunate because we have complementary skill sets, as mm-hmm. you sort of highlighted. I have the science background, Benji with the computer science background, and Ken with the finance and a lot of the legal. And also because we know each other so well and trust each other, I think that it did work out very well.
And so was it really just the three of you when you first started, when you actually started getting the idea actually off the ground, getting space, all that stuff?
We were definitely the driving force. We did have one other scientist who was also a PhD at Harvard who was helping us, but she had already also accepted a postdoc, and mm-hmm. so she was only with us for 4 months. But that's Judy Tsai, and so she ended up joining our board and was helpful in many ways. And actually, a lot of the groundwork she laid in those 4 months, you can still see it on Agene's website today.
Oh, great. Yeah. Yeah, I guess what kind of thing can you say is like still having an impact that she came up with?
Well, the entire deposit process, for instance, she laid that out with all those arrows, one step at a time, what you put in on each field. She made that, and most of it is still intact today.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I guess from the inception of the idea to when you guys first started bringing plasmids in, how long did that all take?
Well, the first set of plasmids came
from my lab.
Yeah.
And that...
Yeah, that was pretty quick. Right. I think the first real big set was from actually Susan Linkrist's lab. And that was maybe about 6 months toward the end of the year.
So I remember we graduated towards the end of April 2004. And then I know at the end of the year we got our first big kit from Andrew Fire's lab. And this was before he had won the Nobel Prize, but there were already inklings that he was going to. And I remember that being a sign in his faith in the company that things were hopefully going on the right path.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was very good.
That was over Christmas break.
That was over Christmas break. Yeah. Yeah. We were here every day doing transformations. Yeah.
We went to visit Dr. Fire in his lab, and I remember I had to take the DNA home on an airplane, and I was told not to get it past X-ray, so I stuffed the plates in my back jean pocket and walked through the security.
Interesting. And that was probably about 1 year after the idea's inception, actually, maybe a little bit longer than that. I moved back in the fall of 2003 after we discussed the idea. There was a lot of work that needed to be done to lay the groundwork for that.
Yeah.
But it was probably about a year till when Plasmid actually came in the door, and then a little bit longer before the first actual distribution, too.
Yeah.
So
a year is a pretty long time to not have another job going, and also there's not any money coming in from Plasmid distribution yet. So I guess how did you guys both personally deal with that, and also how did you get funding for the company to keep it going?
It was definitely a labor of love, I'd say, in the beginning. As a nonprofit, you know, it's difficult to raise VC money or that type of funding. We did have some early donations, but I continued to work part-time at Dana-Farber to get some money. And truthfully, it was difficult. We ended up moving back in with my parents.
All three of you together?
No.
No, no.
Me and Benji.
it was it was definitely challenging. As Melina said, there were some friends and family donations, but there really wasn't very much money in the beginning. I think we basically didn't take salary and try to minimize costs as much as possible those first couple of years. Mm-hmm. For myself, I moved into a four-bedroom apartment with some friends to save as much money as possible. As in Alston, Brighton, it was basically a closet. Mm-hmm. I had saved a little bit of money from working in investment banking. That's one of the good aspects of working in corporate America, is that you can generally save a fair bit of money. So I was able to at least carry myself a couple of years with no income.
Sure.
But it was a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess during that time period, what would you say was kind of the most challenging aspect of all of it?
Actually, I wouldn't say it was the finances, because doing the PhD, I was already kind of used to living with very little resources financially. But the challenges of starting the company itself and keeping the company financially resourced were, you know, very interesting and difficult challenges. So one thing was the, you know, when can we start distributing? And the MTA process took longer than we had thought. So for every transfer of a plasmid from one institution to another, there's this material transfer agreement that needs to accompany it. And before Agene, those were all mostly done on paper. They were very slow. And we knew that if we wanted to scale this and make it very accessible to people, we would need to kind of transform that system. And that took many more months, I think, than we had anticipated, which, you know, therefore made it slower for us to get income and to become self-sufficient.
Sure.
In the end, building, you know, we built an electronic system, standardized the agreements, and I think that has now become a big asset for Agene. But it took a while to lay that groundwork.
Yeah, I would say it's fair to say we're kind of a leader in standardized MTAs now. And that's kind of been essential to Agene growing, as you said. But it kind of also locks us into a particular type of agreement. If you were to go back and change like how that process works, would you go back and change it, I guess?
I think so. I think at the time, there weren't that many options. We chose the UBMTA, which is a universal MTA, to be able to use, that was already established by Autumn and the NIH prior to when we came, but basically not many people were using it. We chose it because it was easy for institutions to at least be able to review because they'd seen it before. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, yes, it would be nice to have a more flexible system right now. I'm not sure what the path of adoption would be for mm-hmm. something that was completely new. So it's really hard to say. I don't think we had many choices at that moment. It was already very difficult, as Melina was saying, getting the buy-in from institutions to be able to use the electronic MTA system. Trying to go with something even more novel may have actually made the hurdle even greater to, mm-hmm. to overcome. For me, I would definitely say the MTA system is part of it. It's part of a larger thing, a challenge that I saw the first couple of years of Agene. We were trying to create essentially a modern e-commerce business to distribute plasmids to institutions that really wasn't done before. So there was the electronic MTA piece, but there was also electronic ordering. Actually, a lot of ordering for labs wasn't done online either. A lot of it was done over the phone and via fax and purchase orders. And we decided to go away from that system as well to make it more efficient and to reduce transaction costs. But there was a lot of inertia in terms of institutions, both on the legal front and on the purchasing front, mm-hmm. that we came up against in trying to make that an efficient system. So a lot of the things that we did were trying to minimize transaction costs, but at the same time, we would run into the institutional sort of way that academic institutions always did things.
Sure. And kind of modernizing all those processes, Benji, you were obviously deeply involved with that because you put together essentially the technical systems that people would use for it. Did you have any experience like developing e-commerce systems or anything like that beforehand?
No, and it probably showed. You know, we were, I mean, other than you know, looking at an Amazon website and saying, "Hey, that's what it should be."
we still do that
today. Yeah. No, we kind of went in blind. I think we went in blind, actually, interestingly, for a lot of things. I think for me, the hardest part at the beginning, starting Agene, was gaining credibility, mm-hmm. Especially to get deposits. I think basically without deposits, we weren't going to be successful. And we tried so many different ways to figure out how to gain credibility with scientists so that they'd be trusting us to hold on to their samples and distribute them, and just convince them that this idea was going to work. If you have some business experience today and you were going to start a company, you would do some market research, figure out where the big markets are and do all that stuff. And we really didn't do any of that. Like we tried, like today we realize, you know, a big part of Agene's businesses from mammalian, sciences in cancer research and mammalian research. And back then, we tried all different things. We remember trying to get credibility by approaching these rare disease organizations and try to become a clearinghouse for materials for them. And, you know, you realize now that there's very few people actually on Earth that actually work for these organizations.
Yeah.
But those were the things that we tried just to get any kind of credibility, any kind of recognition from established organizations that said these guys are trustworthy.
Yeah.
And I think that was probably the hardest part in terms of getting deposits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting to hear because so I'm an outreach scientist now, and it's actually super easy for me at this point to be like, do you guys know what Agene is? And they're like, yes, obviously. and then I can get people to deposit plasmids with us. But for starting off, I guess, what tactics did you take? I know Benji said you started off with the rare disease thing, but I guess you guys are benefited by the fact that we're in the Boston area where we have tons of local biological researchers. But what were the hurdles that you kind of...
I just want to make one comment on something Benji said earlier. I think he's underselling the software side of this. I think that the work that he did, both internal tracking and for our website, were a major differentiator for Agene versus other repositories. Mm-hmm. I mean, partly because of when we started, but also because of the work that he specifically did. You know, every sample that came in, starting from our very first sample, was barcoded and tracked the entire way through. And I think that allowed us to scale efficiently and really to become much more trustworthy, to his point, for scientists so that we wouldn't make mistakes. And then on the external facing website, making it easy for people to browse, arranging materials by professor, those sorts of things. Having that easy to use interface that people had come to expect from the internet, because of when we started, we were able to kind of provide that to them, which people don't always expect from a nonprofit repository, I think really helped with adoption as well.
Sure. And as Benji was saying, around 2004, that's just when like e-commerce is really starting to get big.
It was good timing.
I would completely agree with that. I mean, I think in some ways you can make an argument that Agene is actually a little bit more of like a tech company that sells or distributes a life science product than really just a straight life science company. Mm-hmm. And really that those technology solutions that Benji put in place really helped enable all of that from the early days. And the tech transfer system was all done electronically, which was, again, all technology-based from Benji. And
although Ken came up with the idea for the tech transfer, which was very impressive as well.
Well, it was a team effort all along. But the implementation was so key in terms of technology to make, again, drive the transaction costs low enough that made it the business viable.
Mm-hmm. But back to your outreach question. So, yes, we were very fortunate to be here in Boston, and we had contacts already at Harvard and MIT because of our studies. And luckily, many of those are leading scientists in their field. And so if you can get the leaders of a field to deposit and to trust you, it's a nice kind of forerunner for other people to see that this is a real repository. But a lot of the work up front, we had to do it ourselves to get them to deposit, because they would say, I believe in it, but I don't really have time for it. So, you know, I would be in the lab Xeroxing their lab notebooks, pipetting all of their samples for them to kind of get that seed into the repository.
Sure. So you would actually go into their labs and prepare the plasmid samples for them and do it?
Okay,
yes. Wow.
Early days.
Yeah.
Good service.
A lot more work than that.
It was worse than that. It was here are the samples, but also here are a stack of binders.
So just binders and
plasmid maps, and you had to go in there and flip through them and actually find the maps and whatever notes that they were left from postdocs of centuries ago that pointed to that sample. So it was.
Yeah, I think if you go back through some of the older plasmids, you can still find some old hand-drawn maps.
Absolutely.
which is why, I mean, we definitely come a long way. I guess all thanks to you guys, really, for starting it off. Along that way, once you were going into people's labs and you started getting people to deposit, when did you realize that Agene was going to be successful, that it would be able to grow into something like it is today?
I think when the Andrew Fire deposit came in, it helped me realize that there was certainly this need for it, but I wasn't sure it was going to be successful. We haven't talked about it, but we did apply for some NIH grants and we didn't get them. And so from a financial point of view, the first couple years, we were, you know, losing money, and so it wasn't clear that we were going to be financially self-sustaining. In some ways, not getting the grants did force us to make sure our model of, you know, not being dependent on grants would be there, so that, you know, help preserve Agene for the long term. Mm-hmm. But I'd say I didn't feel like we were going to be successful until we did break even mm-hmm. ourselves. And that happened, it's kind of fortuitous. We went out to, Benji and I went out to dinner with a friend of ours from MIT. And his father actually is a professor at UCSF, or he was a professor at that time at UCSF. And he recommended to us that, he said, these are the two plasmids you need to get. This is a great idea. This is you know, your path forward. And they were the two lentiviral packaging plasmids, which are still, I believe, the most popular plasmids we've ever distributed at Agene. So the next day we came in and we wrote to those scientists and they deposited. And after that, it was kind of a turning point. And by the end of that year, I think we were break even.
Yeah, so that's super interesting because it's kind of like an informal networking thing.
Yeah. Yes.
That got you in.
Yeah. What we didn't realize at that point was that the deposit and request process was essentially a viral marketing tool. Mm-hmm. And that, I think at the beginning, just, you know, we didn't really realize that, and we just kind of stumble up on it. Mm-hmm. The lentiviral vector were extremely popular, and the group was interested in getting somebody else to deal with distributing it. This was the Trono lab and then the Bischer lab from Switzerland. And so they deposited it, and then as a result, a lot of people, you know, everybody uses lentiviral vectors, right? So a lot of people came to Agene to look for these vectors, and then as a result, they learned about what we did. Mm-hmm. And then it just, you know, kind of went, you know, viral from there, sure. essentially. Yeah. And I think the next big wave was getting the Yamanaka factors for unimportant stem cells and that I believe because he got exposure to Agene through the lentiviral vectors, so it kind of just, you know, took off from there.
Yeah, and once you get word of mouth going among scientists, it makes it much easier. We actually see that even I dare say more so now, just because Twitter kind of opens it up a lot. People will constantly ask each other if there's a paper being published, are the plasmids deposited with Agene? And that kind of explodes, and we actively try to reach out to people on Twitter and keep that word of mouth going.
I really do love that. It's not just the actual accessibility of the materials, but almost an attitude change, I'd feel, almost mm-hmm. among scientists, where people expect now that materials are going to be shared, and scientists that are coming out of, you know, newly minted PhDs, they want to share everything. When we had first started Agene, it was right around when shRNAs were popular, and we had some difficulties getting some of them. But with CRISPR, I mean, it was immediately people would publish the paper, and they can't wait to share it and to have the technology widely accessible, mm-hmm. which is great.
So this kind of leads into a question that I had about Agene's brand, which kind of follows into that whole, like you said, it's a change in mindset where you want people to be more sharing oriented. So just to make sure I don't get this wrong, let me read it. Our brand is knowledgeable, friendly, trustworthy, easy to use, dedicated to efficiency and quality, and fostering collaboration and community. So that kind of sets us up to be basically somebody that everybody's going to like. I guess you could think of ways that our brand could have been different. So we could have been more there to protect a lab's research or something like that. Do you guys foresee, I guess, did you come up with those from the get-go? Did you know that that was the kind of, I guess, brand that you wanted to cultivate? Or did that develop organically?
Maybe a combination. I think at the time we were thinking of being your dream lab manager. Mm-hmm. So kind of somebody you could always come to when you needed something, whether it's a reagent or information or things like that. And I think that's where it's sort of built from. But we've become more detailed over mm-hmm. the years.
Sure.
With that.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely contributed to the success, just because people really do, they just like us when we go out somewhere.
Well, for me, I think that the brand sort of evolved organically. I think there was some direction that we put in at times, but we also tried different things. Like being the lab manager, we also had different taglines. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, we had this idea for Agene being acquire, distribute, discover, the ADD piece, and we even used that in the beginning, but then moved away from that too as well. So I think that there were different attempts at thinking about how to position the brand, how to make it more accessible. Even the logo and the website went through a couple different iterations, mm-hmm. trying to think about how to connect with the audience, with the market. But in the end, I think it did sort of kind of organically grow, mm-hmm. but it really stemmed from that core mission of trying to help scientists and help their labs. And I think that piece is really has remained constant.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said about the logo, I've seen older versions of the logo where Agene almost kind of looks like the title to the Terminator movie. which I think it very much signifies like how different we've become, right? And if we had a logo that was still like that, I could see how people would see us as more corporate, as opposed to somebody that wants to like get them to share and everything. Yeah. So it's great that we've evolved the way that we have.
I would say one additional thing about brand and culture, and they intersect and they're not quite the same, but I would also say that the culture of the organization really did help reinforce the brand too, and the sort of the culture of the team, and that piece was also very organic. We didn't spend a lot of time thinking about how to evolve the culture in the company. It just sort of happened with the team that we ended up building and the people we brought in. We really built a very collaborative, friendly and trustworthy group that really, I think, then helped also bring the brand that direction by building the team that way. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't as much very deliberate, I think, in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. I guess if you were to describe the culture of Agene, how would you guys describe it?
I do think people here are very mission-driven. And I think it's a really good point, Ken, that they do sort of embody this brand. I mean, people here are knowledgeable, friendly, trustworthy, all of these things, fostering community. So I think that people take their work seriously in that sense, but at the same time, it's very fun-loving here. And I don't know how much of that stems from the fact that, you know, we started as a family and we'd always eat lunch together because we all knew each other, and then now we still continue to kind of have that atmosphere at lunch. Or how much of that just would have happened naturally anyways, being such a nonprofit, mission-driven organization. But it's, you know, it's been great having such wonderful Agenes here to work with.
Definitely. And kind of also in line with that brand and building community, it's interesting that the first couple of plasmids that got really popular came from Switzerland. So Agene has kind of been a global company from the get-go. Did that make things more difficult for you guys when Agene got started, or how did that impact growth?
From a logistics perspective, that was difficult from the very beginning. And we had to deal with international transfers of materials essentially from the first year that we started taking in materials and distributing them. And that's maybe different than some other companies that, you know, generally start locally distributing within their country. We very much said, okay, we're an international organization. We're going to send out things and try to receive things internationally from day one. And we didn't have really experience with international trade and export and import. So we had to build all of those systems and work with, at that time it was DHL, and then we, you know, ended up changing the shipping systems later. But we worked very closely with different outside consultants and our legal team and vendors to really help build some of those processes. But it wasn't easy.
Yeah.
I am very proud that now we ship more than 50% of our plasmids internationally, though. It's been very satisfying to know that we can have a positive impact around the world and not just here in the U.S.
Sure. And was that kind of part of the plan from the get-go? Did you guys expect that? Or did you expect to take the more classic model of doing more local distribution first and then going from there?
I think we expected to go international, and it may grow more slowly, but that eventually that's what we were hoping for, because science is such an international community.
Right, yeah, and it's great. I mean, it's also awesome just to be able, like you said, enable people who wouldn't have access to things in the U.S. anyway, just because
exactly.
They're not right there.
I would say on that, though, I think I expected it always to be international, but I didn't necessarily have the same appreciation for what that meant until doing more of the international trips to actually visit scientists, which I think we started doing maybe in 2009 or 2010 or so. We did more, we've really focused on international distribution, and I'd go visit the labs, and I remember just being, having a little bit more appreciation going to these labs in whether it be Brazil, Tokyo, or Switzerland, and visiting these scientists and seeing that people all over the world are using Agene plasmids, and that it really is helping them, and they would talk very passionately about their research and say, okay, this Agene plasmid was really critical to this experiment, and that really made a difference for me. One, because I could personally see and talk to scientists who were benefiting, and then also to see the global reach of the organization too, which was very cool.
Right. Yeah. And so we're continuing to try to grow ourselves globally, but we're also trying to grow ourselves in terms of what we actually distribute now. And I've been curious if you guys would start a similar repository now that wasn't based off of plasmids, based on your experiences working with scientists, what would you do?
That is a great question, Tyler. I think we were very fortunate to have chosen plasmids. They are easy to validate and easy to replicate. And relatively easier to ship, actually, as we talked about international shipping, than some of the other materials. It's kind of surprising, actually, that there wasn't a big plasmid repository before, because there were repositories for cell lines and for mice and for other strains and things like that.
Right, which are logistically much more difficult.
Which are logistically much more difficult. So I think plasmids was a good one to pick. As you know, you and maybe some of the listeners already know, we are expanding our offerings here at Agene and looking for new ways that we can help scientists. And so in the last couple of years, we did launch the viral vector service, where we're taking our popular plasmids and making them into ready-to-use lentiviral and AAV particles. And I have been actually impressed with how much demand there is for these materials as well, and the impact that we can have on the community in helping expedite their research and also, you know, kind of maintain high quality standards across the board. And so yeah, I mean, it's a good question. It's something we're certainly thinking about.
Sure. And Benji and Ken, you guys have both moved on from Agene, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But now that you have kind of an outside perspective, is there something else that you think would benefit the same way that plasmids have from a repository? And have you been able to talk to people about that kind of thing?
Well, I think we stumbled upon plasmids. Obviously, that was the first. There was a clear need, and we went into it. And it's a really good material, actually, for starting a material for starting a repository. Right? It's easy to propagate. It's relatively easy to store. It's extremely easy to verify. Most modern materials don't have that property. So it you know, from a business perspective, I think you really couldn't have picked a better material. Also, if you think about Agene's brand being fostering collaboration and sharing, plasmid is this fairly innocuous piece of thing that you can share often and frequently, and it's not a huge commitment. Whereas, you know, starting a mice project or whatever, you got to set everything up. It's a huge commitment. This is just, oh, you may just want to try this, you may want to try that. You get a plasma from this lab, you get to know them. So it's a really good material for fostering sharing as well. I think that, you know, it was really the choice that we just stumbled up on.
So. Yeah. I'll echo Mui and Benji. I think we're very fortunate with plasmids. I mean, I think there could be other opportunities for other materials that could make sense as a repository to help the community. And as Malia is saying, Agene can look for some of those opportunities. There are some that may not make sense for Agene to pursue. And I think I see a lot of other people who are interested in biorepositories, and there are ones that are successful, and there are ones that are probably struggle a little bit. I think the ones I see that struggle are the ones where it's not clear who the market for these materials is, if there's a demand from the scientific community to receive them. A lot of people say, well, I have a collection of samples. I want to make them available to the community, so I'm going to get a grant and put together a biorepository. If there's no demand for those materials, how is that going to be sustained later on after the grant expires? And I think that's something I've seen for quite a number of other biorepository models. So I think what I would do when setting out and looking at a material and what the opportunity is really start with, what is the demand for this, right? What do scientists want? And then looking at what the cost model is. And we, you know, as Melina and Benji said, we were very fortunate on plasmids. They're very easy and cheap to be able to store and replicate. Some of these other materials are not like that, and it may mean that the model for how you run a repository is different. It could be a little bit less like high volume trying to get things out into the community, and might be the market may be very small, so that you have to charge a higher price, and it's a little bit more higher service. And those different types of models can work, but the Agene model doesn't necessarily mean it would work for all material types.
Sure. Yeah, and the reason that I asked that question is we are getting more and more focus on reproducibility, and I think a core component of reproducibility is reagent sharing. So it's great that we can do plasmids and viruses, but it's kind of an open question, I think, for more complicated things, how you actually get those out to people from individual labs into other labs. And as you're saying, the model could be very different, and maybe that's how you make it work. But it doesn't seem like, as you said, having a grant structure is necessarily sustainable, just because it's hard to keep the funds going over time, right? But I guess, Agene, Melina, you could maybe chime in on this and what you think could have a bigger role in that kind of thing in the future if we have access funds to be able to subsidize these things or something like that.
Absolutely. And I think, as Ken mentioned, it really is demand driven. So we are listening to the scientific community. And if people have ideas for things that they would like to see shared, we'd love to hear them.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, so as I kind of hinted to before, Benji and Ken, you guys have both moved on to different positions at other companies. So can you guys give me a quick explanation of what you do now? I guess we'll start with Benji.
Okay. So I now work at Ginkgo Bioworks. We call ourselves an organism company. The mission of the company is to make biology easier to engineer. We're trying to create a platform that essentially make engineering biology less of an ad hoc bench activity into a kind of an industrial platform. So we're using we're engineering custom cells to make biologics for agriculture, to make pharmaceutical supplements, nutritional supplements, culture ingredients, stuff like that. So stuff I do every day is really trying to build up these pipelines that takes the things that people currently do at a bench side in a somewhat small and slow pace and make it kind of fast and high throughput.
Sure. And have you been able to apply things that you learned while developing Agene?
Oh, yeah, hugely. I mean, I was basically kind of a novice in biology before I started Agene and learned a lot from Melina and everybody else at Agene. And that's how I got into it. And yeah, that's...
Cool. Yeah, and I guess now that you're working at a for-profit company, are there any? I guess, do you feel like there's any big differences, or because Ginkgo is also a mission-based company, does it feel very similar?
There's quite a bit different.
Yeah.
The access to funds kind of really make a big difference.
Sure.
We're able to raise a lot of money, and as a result, essentially to leverage the money to do things faster.
Mm-hmm. Ginkgo has also grown pretty rapidly as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I guess how many people work at Ginkgo now?
Probably around 200 now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Agene's still, I guess we're at 80, but we're growing pretty rapidly too. But it's interesting to see kind of the difference that, I guess, because Ginkgo has only been around for, I don't know how
long. Actually, it's been around for quite a long time. Went through a kind of a different growth trajectory than most companies that you probably, most people are familiar with. So, started in 2008.
Okay, yeah. So that's cool that you work there, and I'm awesome that you've been able to apply a lot of the stuff that you've learned. Ken, where have you moved on to?
Yeah, so I left Agene, I think, about 2 years ago or so. I sit on the board still, but I decided I wanted to get back into helping early-stage companies get started. I was interested in this really entrepreneurial aspect of what we did at Agene and seeing if we could sort of replicate that, or I could help companies get started. I went back as entrepreneur in residence at Tufts University, my alma mater, 2 years ago, really focused on how I can help companies get translated from the academic research into a startup. And over the last year and a half or so, we worked on a program to create an incubator for companies that are coming out of Tufts. So that just launched a few months ago, mm-hmm. called Tufts Launchpad Biolabs. And it's an incubator for companies that are generally between 1 to 10 people, seed to Series A funding, who have some good data out of the lab but need to translate that and further the proof of concept before going out and raising more money and building up the team. So the program actually helps both host them on-site in a lab facility and then provides additional business services and support to companies just as they get started. And really this dream came out of my vision of seeing what we did at Agene and how we went over some of the struggles that we had here in terms of both funding and facilities and building the team and working with vendors. All of that was really tough when we started the company. And could there be other ways that we can provide support to startups to make it easier for them, when they're getting going? So that was the reason why I came up with that idea, and we just launched that, which is exciting. Additionally, I also work for a startup that just came out of the George Church Lab, That's a CRISPR-related company that's trying to produce organs that could be used to solve the transplantable organ crisis in the world. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people who are waiting on organ donor wait lists for a kidney, a heart, a liver, don't really have great alternate solutions. So we're trying to be able to produce organs that can save people's lives. And we're using CRISPR to be able to help modify organs to make them compatible to be able to put into human bodies. What's really exciting about that opportunity is, one, it's another translation of research coming out of academia, and two, it's an example of a company that's using CRISPR tools, which Agene had a huge role in making available to the community, and how you actually translate that into a real-world application that hopefully can save lives.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's interesting that both you and Benji have moved on to places that are still biotech companies and are using, like, really cool biology applications. So SynBio for Ginkgo, and then CRISPR for, what was the name of the company?
eGenesis.
I guess, do you guys feel like that you've kind of been pigeonholed into those areas, or do you just really like being in the biology sector now?
I like it.
You like it?
Yeah. I enjoy it. I mean, it's such a complex field. From an engineering background, I'm an engineer. By training from an engineering background, to come to a field where we understand probably literally nothing. Mm-hmm. It's actually somewhat refreshing, mm-hmm. because there's just so many different challenges.
Sure, yeah. So you get to learn a lot as you're going along. Nice.
I'm attracted to the mission-driven aspect of biotech and life science in general. Pretty much all of the ventures that are in the field have some greater mission of trying to help human health, which is different than a lot of other sectors, which I think is, again, one of the reasons why I continue to work in it. With that said, I have a diverse set of interests and would be open to working in other sectors and in some later date. But right now, I love what we're doing in eGenesis and for the sector.
Sure, yeah. Emilina, I don't mean to make it seem like you haven't moved on to new roles. Your role has definitely evolved a lot at Agene. So you mentioned a little bit what you're doing with, like, the viral service now, but kind of what form has your role at Agene taken?
Yeah, so it's true. My role at Agene has evolved. When we first started Agene, I was the executive director for 7 years.
Yeah, I guess you want to talk about, so you stepped down from being executive director, but Joanne Kamens took your place, and I guess, how do you see how she's done in that role compared to how you did in that role?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Joanne was stepped up as executive director after I moved on to the scientific outreach role, and she's done a fantastic job growing Agene. We've more than doubled in size, and she's maintained, if not even grown, that fun culture that we had when we started. So I'm really grateful to her for that.
Yeah, and she's just a fun person to have in the office, too.
yes, and she represents Agene well externally as well. She does a lot of traveling and takes mentorship very seriously.
Definitely, so key to our growth in the last couple of years, I'd say. Yeah.
And then I moved on to be the director of scientific outreach and helped, as Ken was talking about, with the international expansion of Agene, helping to launch the Europe office, and also a lot of the educational resources, because that's also near and dear to me from a mission standpoint, not just to provide tools to people, but to make them successful at using them. And so part of that is the educational resources. So our blog, what we have on our website, and so it's been really great to see. Tyler's actually running it now, how much it's grown and what a great job he's doing with that. And then most recently, I've moved on to a role where I'm part of a research team where we're starting new initiatives here at Agene, which is very exciting. The entrepreneur in me really likes startups, and so this is sort of like an internal startup here at Agene, starting the viral vector project and potentially other new projects down the road. And it brings me a little closer to the science, which also I really like.
Mm-hmm. And kind of along those lines, I guess, what do you see as Agene's future now that we're going forward? We have the viral service. We have a research team now that's kind of dedicated to doing new things. What do you see coming out in the next couple of years?
Spoiler alert. I'm not entirely sure. I wouldn't want to name a material or something like that, but I would say that Agene will continue to grow, not just as plasmid service and its viral vector service, but in other ways that we can help the scientific infrastructure through sharing, through education, and making it easier for people to be successful at their experiments. Reproducibility is something we're certainly looking at as well. So to really be there and help the entire field move forward. I think You know, we talked about different materials, and one of the nice things about plasmids is that they're so widely used across different organisms, across, you know, everything from plants to, you know, biomedical, and a lot of these are very mission-driven, and, you know, it's been nice to be a part of helping advance all those different fields, and so that has been very gratifying.
Mm-hmm. And Ken and Benji, you're both still on the board of Agene, right? So I guess what do you guys kind of see as your roles in Agene as it goes forward?
I mean, I would love to continue to help the organization from the board and be able to provide some business insights, connections, advice for the organization as it grows through its different stages. For me, when I think about Agene's future, I would agree with Melina in terms of, I think there's a lot of exciting new projects and potential for the organization. For me, though, in addition to that, I always saw Agene's one determinant of success, if I could choose one, is the people. And I feel like we really built an amazing team of people that we were very lucky to have, some really great key employees in the beginning, as Melina talked about earlier. But for me, I see Agene's future as people like yourselves, Tyler, you and Eddie. I feel like it's so encouraging for me to see a new generation of Agenies who are so committed to the organization, who are taking leadership roles and coming up with new ideas for where the organization will go. That's where I see is the future in terms of this, of the organization.
Sure. And Benji?
And I'll come back to talk about you. One of in the last few years, one of the things that really got me excited, one of the Agene's offerings is Block Series, and it's essentially, I guess we term here as an outreach effort, but it's really about sharing information and knowledge and use that to our advantage in terms of outreach and marketing, but also it helps the community. And the reason why I'm excited about that is because, so I work for a for-profit company, and we actually can't receive plasmids from Agene. Mm-hmm. However, I think it's probably happens daily that somebody at our company will be on Agene's website looking at information, looking at sequences. I do it, right, to check out one of the older blogs where it has some information that I forgot. And I think that's really cool that we can help people just, you know, serve as a electronic textbook of sorts, right? So that's really cool, and I'd love to see how that expands and the kind of useful information that Agene will continue to curate and distribute to the rest of the world.
Yeah, definitely. And as an interesting kind of like side anecdote, so I interned at Agene before I went to grad school, which was back in 2010, and actually that's when you guys kind of first started putting out a lot of the educational content, and so I was doing a data entry job, which was kind of boring, to be honest with you.
I think
you guys kind of noticed that I was a little bit bored and put me on developing some of the educational content, and that was kind of my first foray into doing more like.
And you noticed your talent,
content.
Not that you were bored.
Yeah. So it's kind of been there for a long time now, and it's nice to see how much it's grown throughout my time in grad school, and I'm happy to also be able to play a role in it now. So yeah, definitely fun.
Yeah, you've done a great job with it. I mean, it's grown a lot, and it's really great because we track how many people are using it, and we see how many people it's helping, and that's fantastic.
Yeah, definitely.
It's fitting that Agene started as a family business, as we're always pushing to find new ways to promote sharing and community in the biological sciences. The foundation set by Melina, Ken, and Benji continue to help us fulfill our mission of accelerating science. Subscribe to the Agene podcast to learn more about the many ways we're fulfilling this mission and having an impact on the scientific community. Agene, a better way to share science.